When a Pulitzer Prize and a MacArthur Genius Award and transformative scholarship are not enough to obtain job security, all academics should be concerned. That's a line written by our next guest, Wellesley Professor Kelly Carter Jackson, about the saga between Nicole Hannah-Jones and the University of North Carolina. Carter Jackson's essay titled, I Am a Black Woman in Academia, Nicole Hannah-Jones's tenure saga isn't unique, can be found on WBUR's Cognoscenti page. And she joins us now to talk about her own experiences as a black woman who's also made a name for herself in the world of academia. Professor Carter Jackson, always good to have you. Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. Happy to be here.
So I really want to focus on you, but I do think we should just quickly do a reminder of Hannah-Jones' situation. As you said, she was a Pulitzer Prize winner, a MacArthur Genius Award winner, highly recommended by colleagues and peers, but the first time around, not offered tenure by UNC. So just quickly remind us what happened there.
It's complicated. So basically, they denied her tenure by not taking up her case. So they kept delaying and delaying when they would agree to meet to vote on her case. But essentially, that delay was a denial. And it's an unusual denial because, for one, no one had been denied that position before. But also, she was the first African-American African-American woman to be denied that that position as well. And she'd also been voted on unanimously by her colleagues and peers. It got shut down at the highest levels.
Okay. And then later they changed. They offered her tenure, but she said, no, thank you.
They did. They reversed course, mostly, I'm going to say, due to public outcry. Basically, there were several campaigns that were going on in her defense, and they wound up reversing course, holding a meeting, holding a vote, giving her tenure, and she essentially said, thanks, but no thanks. I've already been offered a job, and I've taken it at my alma mater, Howard University, so I'm really happy that she's going to be at Howard, but it was, I mean, this has been a very ongoing debate, not just about Nicole Hannah-Jones, but I think academia in general and how politicized it's become. It's been a hot button issue for a long time now.
And it seems like you felt this in your gut.
Oh my gosh. Like, I mean, so my colleagues and I, we've been talking about this really since Cornel West got denied at Harvard. But every time there are major denials, you know, everyone is sort of talking about, have you heard? Did you hear? Because scholars of color, you know, the sort of the rule of thumb is that you have to work twice as hard to be just as good. So oftentimes when scholars of color come up for tenure, their CVs are impeccable. Their awards, their books, everything that they have done has really gone above and beyond the standard for what is required. So when there is denial, it's just gut-wrenching because it feels as though there's very little you can do to be accepted for merit.
So I want to underscore the kind of the magnitude of the problem. You cited some staggering statistics in your piece. So 2019, North Carolina State University, 643 tenured full professors, 9 black women. Duke University, 1,007 tenured full professors, 8 black women. Penn State, 1,190 tenured full professors, 5 black women. You went up for tenure. Was it terrifying based on those numbers? And did you feel like you had to triple proof?
A little. I have, you know, it's funny because I have done a lot. I have. I mean, not to toot my own horn, but I have done a lot. But I still felt like I had a little bit of anxiety because I write on violence. You know, my book, Force and Freedom, is about Black abolitionists and the politics of violence. And so I'm always worried, or at least at the time I was worried, that my book could have been maligned simply because no one liked my topic or they thought my topic was too, controversial. So there's always that sort of lingering in the back. I'm glad that Wellesley did not do that, that I do have tenure and that feels very good. But I know exactly what it's like to be in that position where you feel vulnerable. I also know what it's like to, as I talked about in the article, be at a college or a university where you feel completely undervalued and yet also sort of the poster child for diversity and inclusion. And it feels very underhanded.
So, you know, I've been thinking as I read your piece about intersectionality, that, you know, that big word that we use to talk about mm-hmm. the compounding factors of identity. I've worked at three universities. Mm-hmm. I was a professor of the practice, so not tenure track at one of them. And I mm-hmm. regularly saw junior faculty women, women trying to get tenure, worried about having kids, worried oh, gosh, about yes. Having mentorship, et cetera. And I wonder mm-hmm. then about the dual impact for women of color when there's already a burden for a woman to try to tenure and how mm-hmm. to think about that.
Oh, that's, I mean, again, that's another really big decision, you know. And full disclosure, when I went on the job market, I was pregnant both times and very, very pregnant at for my job interview at Wellesley College. I was like 9 months pregnant. I was like 3 weeks from my due date. And when I had interviewed for a job at Hunter College, a previous university I was at, I was about 7 months pregnant. So very visibly pregnant. And I was terrified. I think when I interviewed for Wellesley, I was more terrified I might go into labor. But I was definitely terrified that this would be a blackball against me and that they would not want to hire someone who would immediately need maternity leave or immediately need certain assistance, because I did. And it's hard to have children in academia. It's hard to plan children around tenure, around publications. And I think because so many of us are entering the field in our mid-30s or later in our lives, these are our prime childbearing years. And so it becomes difficult to say to someone, well, you should have your kids in your 20s when you're not really quite that stable. But when you get to your 30s and you are more financially stable, people still wish you would postpone or just not have children at all in order to keep you in the classroom or to keep you publishing or to keep you active within the field.
So are there networks of support? Do women show up for other women and support them during this process? And I wonder, are white women showing up for Black women and women of color who are trying to tenure?
Oh, man, those are two really great questions. Yes and no. So I think that oftentimes women struggle and there is some solidarity among other women. But I've interviewed for jobs where there was no, essentially no maternity leave that you had to, they wanted you to teach additional classes to make up for the classes that you missed when you were gone. And I said, well, that sounds really unfair. That sounds like, you know, you're sort of getting penalized for having a baby. And one of the women on the committee said, no, it's not. I did it. No, it's not. And I was like, oh, I clearly won't get support from you on this. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, in some ways, some women feel like they have fought that fight. You're going to have to fight it too. There are other women, and I would say the majority of women want to help and support other women and make the road easier for them and make the road you know, easier to navigate for them. But I think that there's still a lot further we have to go when it comes to things like maternity, and especially the pandemic has really laid bare how necessary that is, because many of us have been at home with our children. You've probably heard them in the background when I was giving some sort of interview. It's really, really difficult. And I will say, when it comes to women of color and white women, those tensions are very much still there. I mean, you see this in every field. There was a big story on ESPN in the sports journalism world about who gets positions and who gets denied. But I think that competitive nature is very much a part of academia as well. So you will absolutely have white women who are allies, who are mentors, who are helpful. And I've had that in my life. But I've also had white women who have undermined me and undercut me and fought for positions to make sure that I would be cut out or to make sure that they would have more of a share, not just a fair share, but more of a share at the table. And it's really painful, because trying to let everybody know that, hey, we're all trying to do good work. work. We're all trying to be successful. The sun is big enough to shine on all of us. It's sometimes a difficult concept for people to get because so much about academia grooms you for competitiveness.
Professor Carter Jackson, I'm going to play a quick cut of Nicole Hannah-Jones from an appearance on CNN's New Day earlier this month.
The burden to change systems cannot always be on the people who are being excluded from those systems. The people who created this crisis, this situation at the University of North Carolina, are the people who have the power to change what is happening there.
So in our remaining little bit of time, what does it look like when an institution is making the right changes?
Oh, man, it looks like you're in a room or you're at a table and you're not the only one who looks like you there. I think it's so important to not just have, you know, what sometimes are referred to as token hires or diversity hires, that we really have to bring clusters of people in, and something I've been a huge support of, because I think it's difficult when you get hired at a job and you are the only woman there or the only woman of color there, or the only person of color there, it can be extremely difficult. But when we show our students that we're invested in not just hiring one and not just having an only, but having so many people at the table to represent the diversity that the school themselves boasts so proudly of, you know, I think that's a big deal. So I've always felt intensely supported at Wellesley College, but I also think that I teach, you know, somewhat an anomaly. I'm at a women's college. I'm at a college where, you know, our president is a Black woman. Our dean of students is a Black woman. Our dean of admissions is a Black woman. So I kind of feel like I'm at Spelman a little bit. But, you know, we value diversity at Wellesley and equity and inclusion. And that makes me feel so good to be a part of that community. But I also realized that that is not the norm and that is not the standard. It's so many other institutions, and I've experienced it there as well.
Wellesley Professor Kelly Carter Jackson, you can find a link to her essay on our website, radioboston.org. Professor Carter Jackson, thanks so much for sharing your thoughts with us today. It was good to hear from you.
Likewise. Thank you.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Jamie Bologna, Chris Siderick, Walter Wuthman, and Amanda Beeland. We had help from Ali Audette and Stephen Gelman. Marquise Neal is our engineer, our executive producer, Hitesh Hathi. I'm Tiziana Deering. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.